Yeah, before I come to you, Justin, Rashid, what do you mean by electoral dictatorships?
Thank you for joining us at this forum as we continue or we come to an end of our 8-country election series in partnership with the Henrik Boll Foundation and the Elephant. My name is Pauline Otieno-Scaper, and I'm the Forum and Education Manager here at the Institute. In the run-up to the elections in 2021, this series intended to provide a longer-term view on the democratic development of the region by providing critical analysis and space for debate on the pertinent election processes and governance issues during this season. Our moderator today is Patrick Adara. Patrick is a writer, columnist, a political commentator on Kenyan and international affairs. He's also the curator-in-chief at the Elephant. Asanteni sana for joining us. And Patrick, I'll hand over to you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, everyone, for joining in. As was said before, my name is Patrick Adara, and I'm the curator-in-chief at the Elephant. And joining me now to discuss this question are three, I think, very well-qualified people. We've got Justin Willis, who is a professor at the University of Durham in the UK. We also have Rashid Abdi, who is a Horn of Africa researcher and analyst, currently working for Sahand Research. And finally, last but not least, we've got Samira Gaid, who is a regional and security analyst with extensive experience in Somalia and the Horn. So Samira, let me start with you. What do you make of the recent elections that we've had across the region?
Thank you, Patrick. To answer your question, I really think from the recent elections, when you look at what happened in Uganda, Tanzania, Ethiopia, Somaliland, you know, being the positive story out of all the elections in the region recently, you really don't have much to be proud of or much hope in the processes that have been ongoing. One positive thing is that it's now become a regular thing that we do expect elections, we do expect democratization to be the, you know, the way that we move forward. But aside from that, it has now become like a checkbox exercise where we know what is expected. It's a mantra. You have to have one person, one vote, and everybody works towards that. Nobody really cares to see if that's really devolved or if it's working under the surface or if it's being manipulated by the powers that be at the time to, you know, to install their governments, to reinstall their governments. So I really don't think there's much positive developments when you look at it that way.
Rashid, do you agree?
It is, I think, important to ask the fundamental questions. All these elections, are they actually advancing good governance? Are they leading to, you know, peace? Are they leading to stability? Or are they fomenting conflict? And I think that clearly in some countries, we have seen actually a trend towards electoral dictatorship. And this is a trend which has been going on, I think, for a number of years. But we are also seeing, I think, very optimistic and very encouraging signals, especially in northern Somalia, in Puntland. But also we are seeing the same in Somaliland. So historic, you know, we are beginning to see a historic shift in all Somalia, where the south is still, you know, in a messy kind of a political electoral scenario, but in the north we are beginning to see a lot of progress. And Somaliland's election in particular was, I think, quite significant despite a setback. So generally, I think the picture is mixed, Patrick. Mm-hmm. I think there is room for definitely an improvement. And mm-hmm. I do share some of the sentiments, you know, Samira made, mm-hmm. that we can build on some of the successes that have been made.
Yeah, before I come to you, Justin, Rashid, what do you mean by electoral dictatorships?
I think this is a term which, you know, denotes a number of things. But I think from where I sit, it essentially means elections as rituals, as basically 5-year rituals. And in most cases, elections that have been pre-rigged, in which you have very shambolic processes, where you have an electoral commission that basically is not neutral, is very partisan. And this we see, there are actually a number of states which are very competent and efficient electoral dictatorships. And I would count probably Uganda as among one of those states, where the state has has basically become adept at rigging and stealing elections in every electoral cycle. So I think that term is not controversial at all. And Professor Willis may be able to help us on the academic side. Back to you.
All right, Justin, what do you think? Do you think the region is moving forward or backwards? And feel free to jump in on the electoral dictatorship question.
I'll come to that at the end. Thanks very much, and thanks for inviting me today. So, I mean, it seems to me it would be easy to tell a story at the moment about elections that is, depending on your viewpoint, either very gloomy or very radical. The gloomy version runs like this. The electoral principle around the world is increasingly under threat as the outcome and fairness of elections is challenged by very vocal actors in the US and elsewhere. The wave of democratization through elections in Africa has broken. An era which began in Benin more than 30 years ago is drawing to a close, and in its wake, governments will be free to become less accountable, more authoritarian, and elections will become empty shams or simply cease to happen. In that view, democracy is in peril. But the radical version of the same narrative would see the whole thing in more positive terms. It would say that an external attempt to impose a particular vision of democracy on Africa has run out of steam. That attempt was tied to a particular vision of political and economic order, to what some would call a liberal governmentality that focused on individuals and their responsibility and helped to atomize society. And it was linked to an international financial order dominated by the World Bank. For people who take that viewpoint, what is happening at the present, the retreat of the electoral wave, is probably a good thing because it opens space for more radical change. Democracy, in that view, far from being in peril, may be at last getting a chance to emerge from the shadow of the ballot box. Now, I don't actually subscribe to either of those points of view, I should say, but I think that both of them kind of point us to the idea that this is a moment of profound change. And they both deal with very real international phenomena. The democracy in peril view, I think, risks overstating the role and efficacy of international pressure around elections since the 1990s. The interventions and pressures that have been exerted by what we like to call the international community have not routinely produced accountable governments or transfers of power. Elections since 1990 have often been tools for the assertion of authoritarian power, or have provided mechanism for the negotiation of local and national relationships of patronage, among other things. So the third wave, as some people like to call it in Africa, was a thing, but it was a bit less of an innovative and transformative thing anyway than people like to suggest. By the same token, though, I think electoral politics haven't simply been a device for neoliberal dominance, as some would like to argue. Electoral politics have actually provided space for contestation and popular mobilization. They haven't just narrowed politics down to the casting of the ballot, at least in some circumstances. They've created space for the flourishing of forms of organization which do not reduce voters simply to subjects, but draw their strength from shared ideas of moral belonging, whether those be ethnic or regional or other. And at the same time, the idea of citizenship, which is inherent in universal suffrage, that every adult has a voice of equal value and has the same right to be represented, is a powerful idea. And it has, and it continues to inspire action and claims making by ordinary people across Africa. So elections have been tools of authoritarians, and they have been theatres of patronage, but they've also provided ways for people to question authoritarianism and to articulate ideas about moral community and belonging. And the different possibilities of that moral citizenship are open to question. But elections have provided space for this contest, and I think they'll continue to do so. And that's partly what the book that Patrick said such kind things about says. Now, all that leads me to think that, yes, we are in a moment of change. The world has changed significantly. And there are both perils and opportunities to that. I think it is likely that there will be less diplomatic finger wagging and less international pressure around elections in the future than there has been in the last two or three decades. There'll probably be a smaller presence of international experts and observers. And perhaps there will be less of an attempt to achieve political goals simply through perfecting electoral process. But elections across the region, across Africa, are going to continue to be prominent features of African politics, and they'll continue to be focuses for contest over different possibilities of moral belonging and for arguments over how leaders should lead and what their responsibilities are. Democracy is a pretty hard thing to measure, and I think it would be unrealistic anyway to suggest that elections alone could ever produce democracy. But whatever democracy is, the ability to argue over the relationship between rulers and ruled, and to make argument, to make claims about the nature of that relationship, is surely crucial to democracy. And elections are going to continue to provide a problematic and flawed, but very real way to do that into the future, as they have in recent decades. So I'm neither super gloomy nor super optimistic. I think this is a continuing struggle, as they say.
An overview. Maybe we should have actually started with Justin on this. But if I may come to you, Samira, there is a push, and I think Justin has hinted towards, especially in the context of Somalia, to have one man, one vote elections as a goal. Now, my question following up with what Justin has just said, are elections actually a good thing?
Thank you, Patrick. I think, you know, you would find little opposition to, you know, to democratization and having accountable leaders. I think we all want that. And most Somalis would tell you that's exactly where we should go. We should go to one person, one vote. But in, you know, in places like Somalia, where elections now become the make or break, the reason why the fragile systems fall apart, then you have to question on as to whether we should continue to push the same envelope or political settlements should come first before, you know, an electoral process. And I think there's been that ideal and a mantra by the international community to each political administration, and each political administration, you know, agrees to this because there is the, you know, the rules and the economic support that comes with committing to this path. But is it workable in the context of Somalia? I don't believe so.
Yeah, but just to follow up on that, I mean, the idea that elections bring accountability, Kenya has had elections fairly regularly since the 1960s, you know, actually even before, since 1957, I would say. It doesn't seem to have delivered much accountability. So is it something that Somalia is pretty much going to be going down the same route?
I think that there's that fundamental question on whether elections deliver democratization, or is there other systems that could deliver this? So in terms of Somalia, we have you know, the clan system and systems that existed way before, you know, democratization or, you know, the colonialists came into play. And did those systems deliver, you know, justice? Did they deliver participation, inclusivity? Does this replace a good system? Those are questions that still need to be debated in places like Somalia. In Kenya and in many places in Africa, I do sense that we have learned what we need to deliver to, you know, to outwardly appear as we are, as if we're playing by the rules. And this is a, you know, a rule-based system. And so you can check the boxes and say, we have done that. And the IC is a very big part of that game.
Rashid, I know you spoke of Ethiopia as an example of an electoral autocracy or dictatorship. But my question is there an alternative to elections? Justin, what do you think? Is there an alternative to elections? Is it something that we should persevere with till we get them right?
It's not so much the kind of an alternative. I think the mistake is in thinking that elections by themselves will transform things. And if you can have a kind of an election with a particular specified kind of process that you do absolutely perfectly, then somehow your politics will just become cool. I mean, actually, there is no society in the world in which elections alone can deliver democracy. Right? They have to be kind of rooted in other forms of popular association and popular mobilization within particular legal systems. There's a lot of other stuff that goes on. Now, personally, I'm actually quite a fan of elections by adult suffrage. I think they do kind of have certain political roles as symbolic statements. And I think they do, even in Kenya, there is a kind of accountability that comes out, although I agree, it's a distinctly imperfect one. So, but I think the mistake is to think that that alone will do anything. And it's also a mistake to think that that is a model that's going to fit easily and straightforwardly onto any society in the world. It may well be that other things are actually more important alongside it in some contexts. But I would kind of sort of wave a bit of a flag for elections by universal suffrage, because I do think they do make that statement about equality, about the ability of people to express a voice. It's just that by themselves, they're not enough. They can't deliver democratization alone. And it's a mistake to kind of get sort of too hung up on the idea that if we just get the election right, this society will transform, because of course, that isn't how people live their lives. Elections can be super useful, but they won't in themselves change everything. That's not a reason not to have them. It's just a reason not to overestimate what they can do. And also, sorry to go on, but they can potentially have pernicious consequences. I mean, it's quite easy, as we, you know, Rashid has already kind of averred to this, it's quite easy for authoritarians to build elections by universal suffrage into patterns of authoritarian rule and patterns of authoritarian mobilization. This is a form which lends itself to more than one kind of politics, and we'll kind of have to bear that in mind as well.
Right. Rashid, are you there now? Do you think there are alternatives to elections, or what's your view on that?
Yes, the alternative will be the Greek ideal and a philosopher king. But I don't think that is quite possible. I think we somehow have to make do with a 4-year, 5-year electoral cycle, in which probably we recycle the same kind of leadership, in which we entrench the same kind of leadership. We don't modify or change policies. And I think elections have in some ways also become great drivers of conflict and division. And I think, of course, we have no alternative but to, support elections which are clean and credible. At the same time, I think we must recognize the dysfunctional nature of electoral politics in Africa and especially in the Horn. You have, I think, authoritarian leaders who have become quite adept at giving a veneer of democratization and also electoral credibility, but along the line we realize that these elections are actually rigged. Just take the example of a country like Ethiopia. Ethiopia is a vast country, has had a very difficult history, has had coups, revolutions, and has had a long protracted history of instability. And elections have never been credible throughout history, even when the EPRDF ruled. I think the closest Ethiopia came to a credible election was in 2005. And immediately that election was canceled. And then there was a crackdown on the opposition. And from then onwards, it was a downward spiral. Now, Abiy, who came into power, on the back of a massive wave of popular revolution in Ethiopia. And in the first few months, he embarked on very progressive reforms in Ethiopia. And everybody was encouraged and said that this is a democrat and, you know, he's going to really change the situation. Unfortunately, he's made the situation in Ethiopia even worse than what it was before. And we see him not embarking on actually electoral credibility, but actually consolidating elections as a form of consolidating authority and power by locking up the opposition, by basically having a token opposition and not a real opposition. But that having said, I think also in Ethiopia, we saw also very interesting dynamics in which in regional politics, there was actually competition. So this is the paradox in the Horn. I think ordinary people at the grassroots are yearning for change and are yearning for, reforms. Unfortunately, we have a political elite that basically is so wedded to electoral dictatorship. And I think time has come for people like you, Patrick, and your publication to really demand, I think, greater changes. Back to you.
Rashid, just a quick follow-up. When we have a situation such as Ethiopia, which was, clearly you had a civil conflict happening, you had a boycott by the opposition, and as you said, people being jailed and stuff. Is it that they shouldn't have had their elections? What would your view be on that? I mean, did they help in any small way, or should they simply not have had them because they seem to legitimize a system that you have problems with?
Actually, the paradox in Ethiopia is that it actually has a very efficient and competent electoral commission, which is actually very good at conducting voter registration. Of course, there were pockets of Ethiopia where, because of conflict and instability, they were unable to register. And these were about, in the Somali state, in Afar, in Harar. These were places where the electoral commission had difficulties in registration. But the registration process went smoothly. But I think the dilemma for Ethiopia and I think the biggest problem is that, can you really conduct a credible election in the midst of a conflict and war? And that, I think, is the big philosophical question which I think one has to ask about Ethiopia. Clearly, if you look at just the electoral, the technical point of view, the elections were actually smoothly well run. The problem is that there wasn't any opposition. The only opposition that mattered was in the rural areas, you know. And so what is the use of having a competent, excellent, well-oiled electoral machinery when it's a one-horse race? And I think...
Yeah, but I think Justin might ask whether even having a credible election by itself would actually move things forward. Because I think if you look, for example, in how Kenya approaches it, we bring all these technological fixes to ensure that our elections are not stolen, but they never seem to really deliver elections that people actually believe in. So I'm wondering whether the focus on simply let's have the election, let it be the a credible reflection of what people think, whether that by itself would actually fix too much in societies that are clearly quite fractured.
I don't know whether that's to me or to Justin. Yeah, okay.
Over to you, Prof. Justin, take it on.
I mean, remember, I know nothing about Ethiopia, right? But there is an argument that says, right, that just the holding of elections in itself does potentially change people's relationship to the state and does change people's sense of what academics like to call their subjectivity. You know, kind of, it makes people think, okay, I'm a citizen of the state, I have this relationship, I have a voice. And that might, in a way, that might have empowering effects on them. It might also, of course, have disciplining and constraining effects. But I think we shouldn't assume it doesn't do anything. I think it almost certainly does something. The fact that it doesn't kind of do the things that people might want or expect it to do doesn't mean it doesn't do anything. Right? So right. First off, I think that actually...
I think it's whether that thing that it does, whether we want it to be done.
Yes, that's really what I was going to come on to. So then the question is, okay, so what if that thing that it does is just make people think, okay, well, I'm a citizen, and what a good citizen does is obediently line up and put a piece of paper in a ballot and go home again. That's probably not necessarily... so great. I mean, that doesn't really increase sort of genuine. But if an election provides a space for local community mobilization, for arguments about the nature of right and wrong, for what's good and what's, you know, that actually then it begins perhaps to give people both the sense that they're citizens with a voice and the sense that democracy might mean something more than just putting your piece of paper in the ballot box, right? So I think that possibility exists. In the Ethiopian case, everything, the little I read about this kind of does indeed suggest that this has tended to have a closing down effect in some ways, but it has also, of course, tended to make governing parties think harder about how they respond and what they do. I mean, it is undoubtedly the case that the previous regime in Ethiopia had to rethink how it did politics at a local level as a result of 2005, and it did do things differently as a result. Now, that didn't turn Ethiopia into a democracy, but it did change the way that some people at least got to relate to the state and the possibilities of relationship with the state. So again, your elections, the fact that they don't deliver this, the abstract thing called democratization, doesn't mean that they don't do something, and doesn't mean they don't actually sometimes bring what we might consider benefits in a political sense in terms of opening up certain kinds of space. It's just that they don't do magic.
Right.